Okay, so Mike, Search and Seizure Show. We're going to start talking about some search and seizure questions. For those who do not know you, who the hell are you?
Who the hell am I? Well, you got my name right, so that's good. Good start.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, pretty good, huh? My name's Mike Boone. I am currently active law enforcement officer for, my goodness, over 21 years now.
Nice.
The gray hair, you see, right?
Yeah, I see it.
It's coming in nicely. And I also get the great pleasure to hang out with you and work for your company, do a little teaching.
Yep. You are one of my favorite instructors. And I say it to everybody, so
I'm just sitting here. So yeah, thanks.
Yep. let's answer some search and seizure questions. So just for those who have not, been to the show before, what we do is we get questions, you know, all around the nation from, cops. We have cops on today's show from South Dakota, Nevada and Colorado, Alabama, and Wyoming.
Nice. Spread around the country. That's
it really is. And some very interesting questions. Now, we have Rick on the behind the scene here, and he's going to hopefully let us know if there's anybody who wants to ask a question live.
Sounds like a plan.
It really is. And so just for those people who are, watching this live, we want live questions. And the way you do this is that we can turn on your microphone. And there's no video, just turn your microphone. It's almost like a radio show. Mm. And you can actually just answer, you can ask your question and we'll answer it live.
I love it. It's like the late night talk show.
It's like, it's like the love line for search and seizure. Mm-hmm. So here's what we got. Our first question is from an officer in South Dakota. And basically it comes down to, can police compel a detained person on scene to provide fingerprints? Mm. So here's the scenario, and I want you to answer the question. Say someone breaks into a residence using a rear window, through a rear window, leaving fingerprints smudged on the window.
Okay.
Homeowners are out of town and see the burglar in their house through security cameras. Okay.
Love the technology.
I really do. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I was actually watching my security cameras the other day, and I thought it was great. Like, I actually saw a firefighter in my house. There was no fire or anything like that. Was that kind of weird?
Strange though, but I bet the food is great and the house is clean.
It was actually amazing. and the kids did their homework.
Right.
They really do make great fathers too. So so they see the burglar leave the residence. They call the police, provide a description of the burglar and the direction of travel.
Okay.
Police respond in a timely manner and detain individual matching description of the burglar. Look, it's South Dakota, so it's only him plus the cops. I mean,
maybe some cattle.
I was actually, this is South Dakota. I was actually in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. This is a score brain, but I was in North Dakota last week. Had 5 days of training there. It was a lot of fun.
I look forward to you sending me up there. I haven't been up there yet.
And I definitely will send you there next time. It's like going to Siberia in a sense.
Oh, gosh.
It was actually a lot of fun. Great. Good. Just fantastic people.
I like it.
So the suspected burglar is detained by police. Other officers respond to the residence, and they find the entry location of the burglar and find the fingerprints left on the window. This is the money question, okay? Can police compel the lawfully detained individual to provide his fingerprints for a purpose of later comparison?
Okay.
So I think what's going to happen here is they're probably going to let him go. Maybe they don't have enough. He's not admitting to it.
Right.
We do have the video, but that's
another... access to the video. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Rick, do me a favor. Send me the link to this Zoom so I can get on here and look at the comments.
Oh, very nice.
So I can get on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what do you think?
Let's talk reasonable suspicion just for a second.
I love it.
Because they did throw in some factors that I, just in the way they worded this, that I think are a huge component.
Okay.
Since we're talking about here. The burglary takes place. They've got the homeowner is watching their house get mm-hmm. burglarized, which I can't imagine how horrific that would be. But I imagine someone like you has probably a booby trap somewhere in the house.
Probably.
For that occasion.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But outside of the Bandiera household, you just watch it. You can call the police. And I think the first thing they said, they responded in a timely manner. Awesome, right? Love that. They talked about a little bit about him, matching the description. So they had a video of it. They could see this person here. And I think there was a mention of proximity. It was a little bit close to where the crime took place. So you start looking at some of those factors, putting them all together. The totality of the circumstances, we talk a lot about for reasonable suspicion, no issues with this is our person.
At least reasonable suspicion.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Right. And then you mentioned real quick about, the camera. Do we have the accessibility to it? Maybe real quick that reasonable suspicion turns to probable cause based on what we see and what we can access.
Yeah, sure. So reasonable suspicion is a moderate chance of criminal activity.
Moderate chance, not real high.
It's not high at all. Our seminal case is Terry versus Ohio, but it does have to be somewhat specific.
Yes.
Here we definitely have that.
Definitely.
Okay, so let's say we have at least reasonable suspicion. Okay?
Yes, for sure.
Which we do. So now let's say that, look, for whatever reason, you know, let's say we try to call the homeowners and they cannot provide us with a better description of the person. They cannot provide a little snippet of the video. We're not able to build probable cause on scene, and we're going to have to release this guy. You know, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have any of the evidence from the home on him. You know, let's say we pat him down or whatever.
So we're trying to confirm or dispel our
suspicions. We really are, but we can't do it on scene. We're going to have to do it through fingerprints.
Okay.
Can we compel him to put his fingerprints on some kind of fingerprint card? And some other agencies, I think, have digital fingerprint scanners.
Right.
Can we do it?
Yes. Yes, why? We can. Well, where did you leave your fingerprints today?
Ah, you're going with the whole reasonable expectation of privacy deal?
Well, I mean, shouldn't we?
Okay.
So we'll still think about that. And the answer is yes. We can because we've got, you know, we've got evidence at the scene that we can recover, that we can attribute to them. Mm-hmm. Now we want to make a later comparison. We want to tie those prints together. And when it comes down to it, though, yeah, you know, your face walking around town, your prints on things.
Yep.
You don't have that true expectation of privacy in there. So with that, you're still and you have your reasonable suspicion. You're trying to figure out what's going on. You have, you know, reasonably that this is evidence that's going to help us tie this person to our case.
I think that's exactly right. I think that at the end of the day, no expectation of privacy, at least reduced expectation of privacy on your fingerprints, mm-hmm. and taking those things that you left behind, those breadcrumbs, mm-hmm. we're good to go.
And maybe a little bit too, if you know he walks and we don't gather that now, maybe he's not in the system.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we don't have that possibility of tying it.
So it's a little bit of agency.
A little bit of agency.
Sure. I agree. Now, the other issue I have, like, let's say that we get a hold of the homeowners.
Okay.
And they're able to, you know, give us a snip of the video of the person home. Clearly, we'd have probable cause.
Correct.
And we really, at that point, we should just arrest them. Right?
Yes.
Does the victim need to be on scene?
No.
Not for a felony, especially,
no.
right?
No.
Now, we might have some problems with misdemeanor.
Fair probability going on.
Yeah. Right? We may have a problem with misdemeanor because they're supposed to be committing your presence.
Correct.
And they're not really there. So that might be, right. Yeah. That might be complicated.
Watching that video is not as if you're seeing it happen yourself. Yeah. For
yeah.
sure.
So we, I think we arrest him and then we just get his fingerprints during the booking process.
Absolutely.
No doubt. So, but I am aware of, just so we, you know, on the same page, I'm aware that cops in California, probably other places too, but cops in California do have fingerprint scanners mm-hmm. in the field when they're doing reasonable suspicion stops. They can help kind of confirm the person's identity if they're not sure. And that
awesome.
yeah, it really is. And that's the same thing as what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So if they can do it on a computer, they can do it on a piece, an old school, let's say South Dakota has the
absolutely.
Old school. Ones. All right. This one gets a little more complicated. This is an interesting one. This is a cop from Nevada, actually in Las Vegas. And it says, I'm requesting a pin based on vapor wake detection dogs. Do you ever heard of vapor wake before this?
No, not that terminology. But it kind of makes sense in the wording. And it explains a little bit.
Yeah, so, vapor wake. So mm-hmm. we'll describe what this cop is saying, then we'll kind of go. So he says, I recently attended a canine handler school in Auburn, Alabama, and now have a vapor wake detection dog capable of detecting explosives and firearms.
Man.
Vapor wake training allows a dog to smell the odor coming off the person as they walk. I was wondering why these dogs were looking at me the other day. You know what I mean? I should have kept my cocaine at home.
Right.
The canine is typically passed between 4 to 6 feet behind the person. Oh, there's the wake, right?
Yes.
The vapor kind of, wake mm-hmm. is behind. It's like a boat.
There you go.
If they detect explosive or firearm odor, they begin pulling towards the person. The canine is typically not allowed by the handler to reach the source and are kept at least 1 to 2 feet away from the person. If a person abruptly stops, the canine will typically sit as a final alert, but otherwise, if the person keeps walking, the canine will just keep pulling towards that source.
Okay.
I believe the handler will have enough information based on an initial change of behavior and then pulling directly towards that subject to provide at least reasonable suspicion that the subject is in possession of a firearm, ammunition, or explosives, even without the final alert. But please correct me if I'm wrong. So let's go through some questions here. First of all, would this constitute a search under the Fourth Amendment?
So it's interesting. I want to touch on the vapor weight concept, because I did look a little bit, and you mentioned it here. It's like, yeah, it's kind of like a, yeah, picture a boat, and it, as it travels, you leave that kind of that wake behind, and that's the detectable smell that you leave behind you. It lingers, it, you know, stays permeating in the air that the dog can pick up on, and you walk past and doing so. So that's what these dogs are trained to do. Just kind of, it was a new term I hadn't heard before.
I never heard. Yeah.
Kind of cool. But when you know, you look at the way they're going about doing it initially, he talked about, you know, staying 4 to 6 feet away from a person, and then the dog alerts and wants to draw closer, but they don't allow that dog to get within 1 to 2 feet.
Sure. They don't want the dog to bite probably or touch.
If the person stops, the dog's trained to stop, or if they keep moving, they keep pulling there. So, you know, when you talk about free air sniff, to a certain degree, the courts always looked at, like in Cabal, Illinois versus Cabalas, where he was stopped and they did the dog sniff around the car. Most things with dog sniffs are around, you know, inanimate objects.
Right.
Cars, bags. But when you start putting the little snapper snout in people's faces, that could be a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a little different, isn't it?
A little bit more intrusive, I'd say. So I did a little bit looking into this here, and I found a case out of New York, and it was just recently they made a decision on here, People versus Butler. I don't have the full citation on it, but they talked a little bit about that difference between a car sniff and sniffing of a person. And there's a great quote in there. They talk about, you know, most people, and I'm not going to say it, but most people take measures or go about ways to prevent offensive odors to other people. So you know, there's kind of, you try to be a little bit contained in your smells out there. I just thought that was an interesting topic that they spoke about there. But now when you go out in public, yeah, you expose yourself to the world and the people around you. But do you expect somebody to walk up and go?
And so, you mean like the human being sniffing?
Yeah, the human being person coming up going, getting all creepy in your business. Like, man, you smell great today.
And what if that human being, it had on their light jacket said DEA?
Right, yeah. You would
be like, right. So
what are you doing here? You know?
Right. So they're trying to smell like plain view, you know, plain smell evidence, right? Mm-hmm. Would you think that was kind of intrusive?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's kind of what this case looked like, is, you know, putting a dog and that inherent fear a lot of people have of dogs.
There might be some, especially if it's a dual purpose dog.
That's kind of that fear in there. So,
all right.
When you start looking at this there, you know, I feel like it's,
well, but look,
the closer you get,
okay,
the closer you're walking into a search, I think.
But here's the other problem that we have. I think on the other devil's advocate is that, this guy doesn't know the dog is sniffing him.
Correct. So you're just doing your business in life.
Right. So you can't,
especially
have,
from those distances.
Yeah. You can't violate a person's expectation of privacy when they had no, well, I shouldn't say they had no idea that it occurred, because cats
didn't know either.
Cats
right?
didn't know. But I think in this case, he's in a public place.
Right.
The dog is lawfully present.
Mm-hmm.
The tape recorder in cats wasn't lawfully present in that case, but the dog is lawfully present, just sniffing around. I don't think you have a search.
Under the, when they keep the distance and they're
they
just
do
around,
a vapor wake
when they're
no
in the
search.
Vapor wake, no search,
no search.
No, I don't have an issue with that.
Am I able to run my dog to search people in this manner in a public area such as the Fremont Street Experience? So, for those who do not know Vegas, and I've been here for a while, Fremont Street Experience is old school Vegas,
mm-hmm.
where the horseshoe was and the four queens, whatever. And it's a lot of fun, but it's also it's just old school Vegas where they turned that whole center downtown almost into a mall, a pedestrian mall.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's asking here, can we actually, if people are like sitting, let's just take it, because if we have a vapor wake, we don't have a search.
Right.
But let's say people are sitting down on these benches in the Fremont Street Experience, and he brings the dog up with the purpose of the sniffing.
With the purpose of the
sniffing. I think that's exactly what you're talking about.
I think
about.
People are offended.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that if you're sitting there and you're minding your own business and you're, you know, and then boom, this dog is like directed towards you, and you're now being sniffed by this dog, especially by a uniformed officer.
Correct.
I think the easiest way to handle this is that, would a reasonable person feel free to leave?
No.
It's like you feel like you're in trouble.
Absolutely.
So maybe that's, and also, even if you weren't, in, even if you felt free to leave, would it still offend a reasonable expectation of privacy?
No, because you're just, it's like, you're in my business.
You're in my business.
You've got the snout, the teeth, the big furred monster.
Sniffing.
Yeah,
it's sniffing. Super close to your space.
Mm-hmm.
You feel intruded upon.
Absolutely.
I would definitely not be doing that.
Yeah. I got. Well, there's one more thing, though, on that I think that we should talk about, Anthony, is The dogs are trained to smell explosives and
firearms.
Firearms.
And that's actually the last thing I want to talk to you about. Mm-hmm. We have a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know where this dog is sniffing. I think somebody even said, you know, on the webinar, they're like, hey, is this in an airport? Is this in a stadium? Or is this in a public place? Mm-hmm. Clearly, I feel that this dog in a public place is legally useless because it's not illegal in Nevada to have a concealed carry, even open carry.
Right.
It's not illegal to have a concealed carry weapon if you're properly licensed, but we assume that people are properly licensed. We don't stereotype people because we think that they have a gun and therefore they can't have it.
Correct.
But not in Nevada, at least. So I think we have a problem. The dog is, we don't know if the dog has learned to explosives. Mm-hmm. It could be a firearm. Now, I don't know if people have to have guns in parks in Vegas. Do you know what the law is on
there? I think Las Vegas City, I believe it's a no. I think county also.
Right, and that might be what's kind of going on
here. Yeah. And I think even the, because we're talking specifically about the downtown Fremont experience, I think there's even some other specific to that corridor ordinances that the city is
in. It's a park.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So maybe that's what's kind of going on here. So maybe it might be unconstitutional, but that's another day.
Right.
Because I think parks are part of, but anyway, so if that's what's going on here, if the cop is doing a vapor wave in a restricted area and the dog alerts, I think we're good.
Yes.
I think it's reasonable suspicion.
Yes.
Right. I mean, he could have shot at the range earlier that day.
Correct.
I think this is a softball question. Let's answer it real quick so we can get another one of these questions. This one's from Alabama. The officer says, can you ask for consent for DNA if you haven't read Miranda yet? So in some context, approaching an arrestee to execute a warrant, he says he immediately does not want to talk to me. He wants a lawyer. All right. So he's arrested for a warrant. Mm-hmm. He wants a lawyer. Fine. I had no need to question him anyway, but I wanted to get a DNA sample. So I told him I just need to know if he would voluntarily give me a DNA sample. And he consented, signed the consent form and gave me a sample. Was his rights violated?
No.
What do you mean his rights weren't violated? Where the hell did you get off? He said, did he make it very clear, Mike, about he wants a lawyer?
Yes, he did.
So what's the problem here? Why is this illegal?
Well, first of all, the officer doesn't even want to talk to him. So it's not even a Miranda situation anyway. Dude,
when he puts that swab in his mouth, he's going to.
Right. We're going to talk Miranda here for a real quick second. Yeah, there's three components for Miranda. You know, there's arrest like custody. Well, he's arresting him. So yep,
definitely
all right.
That.
But the cop said, I have no reason to even speak with this guy. There's no imminent
interrogation. There's no imminent interrogation.
Yeah, so there's no. And then known officers, the third part when we talk about the three.
Yeah, no
components.
It doesn't apply to undercovers.
Yeah, unless they're undercover there. So Miranda doesn't apply for him to invoke a lawyer in this situation.
So asking him, let me ask you this. So you're saying, and Zach can jump in here, you're saying that when he asked for a DNA sample, that is not interrogation.
No, it's not testimonial.
It's not testimonial. It's simply asking him, hey, okay, no problem, Brooks. That's it. He's basically saying that, hey, I want some physical evidence from you.
Correct. But you do have to create an environment where it's free and voluntary. You can't coerce this guy into it. You can't, hey, you got to give me this.
No gun to the head.
No gun to the head. But it sounds like he's setting it up the way he should. It's consensual. He has a choice to say yes or no. And the voluntariness aspect of it, yeah.
I mean, isn't it true that I was a trooper and I've been involved directly or indirectly in 1,000, I'm just making this up, but 1,000 DUI investigations. I think that maybe Miranda was read 50 times out of all those 1,000 cases.
Right.
But all of them, we asked the guy for bleed or breathe. Mm. Isn't that essentially the same thing here?
Yeah.
I mean, it's physical evidence.
Right, yeah.
I want you, but I never read a Miranda.
Yeah.
And even if he says, hey, I want a lawyer for this, I don't care. I'm not asking you a question about I'm not looking for anything incriminating.
And they were consenting for you putting a
needle in their arm.
Needle in the arm, man,
right.
For sure.
Good to go.
Yeah.